As we approach the beginning of summer moving season and upcoming commissioning of USMA and ROTC cadets nationwide, now is the perfect time to talk about moving. The process of a military move in PCS is not simple. There are many ins and outs of the system, and it's easy to take costly missteps along the way. Today in the huddle, we talk our own experiences about moving across the years and offer our own advice and recommendations to make your next PCS as easy as it can be. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, episode 47. Tips, tricks, and advice for your next military move. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I'm Major Micah Klein, your host for today's episode. Joining me on the podcast today is Captain Kyle Stillwell and Captain David Laura. Far from experts, but full of experience, we're going to break down the process of PCS moves and try to give you some actionable tips that you can use during this PCS season. So guys, I'd like to kick off this episode by you telling us how many moves that you've had as an Army officer or cadet, for that matter, and what types of moves you did, whether that be government move, ditty move, or partial ditty move.
So our family, over the last number of years, we've conducted two ditty moves, one real kind of a smaller ditty move once we first commissioned and went to the first duty station, and then another ditty move to the captain's career course. Again, we that was a bit of a larger ditty move. After all of that, and we'll get to this later on, we decided that we really didn't want to go through all the packing, loading, and moving again, and so we have had movers move our stuff for the last two moves after that.
Thanks, sir. Happy to be here today. So I've done every single one of my moves has been a partial ditty. I've just counting up, I've done five over the last, well, five in my first 7 years in the Army. And I also realized that I moved all of my household goods five times during my first 5 years in the Army. So every single one of those has been partial ditty. So unlike Kyle here, I really deferred back to the Army for the majority of stuff. My philosophy is just kind of getting the Army to move it and make whatever money I can by putting stuff in my POV, and really learned a lesson before my first PCS move just to maximize that, even if I'm just driving, one day away from Maryland to New York, then to weigh my vehicle along the way, you can still make money doing that by bringing some of your household goods along the way. So everyone has been partial ditty for me. The big consideration for us was the cost that we would make. So based off of the weight of our household goods, we knew that we would not make a significant amount of money by doing a full ditty, like Kyle mentioned before.
Just to clarify one point on it, so we also did a partial ditty with every single one of our moves. To clearly delineate, you can have the government secure a contractor for you to move all of your items on household goods, but almost always you're going to bring with you your uniforms, some major utensils, maybe favorite kids' blankets or anything like that. So almost always, even if you have the government move the majority of your stuff, you can still make some money back on moving the stuff that you would just naturally bring with you anyway.
Yeah, that's a great point. I actually, on my latest move, I was authorized 17,000 pounds of stuff, which is insane. I don't know, unless I were to move a motorcycle or something along those lines, that I would have 17,000 pounds of stuff. So my moves have been, I did a partial ditty. So I had the government come and they moved the majority of our stuff. I think I only had like 5,000 pounds of stuff. I was authorized something crazy like 16,000 pounds of stuff. And then I did a partial ditty for the rest, which was about 500 pounds of stuff. I think I made about $300 off of that, which is fine. I mean, we weren't getting rich, obviously, and this is not a big money-making, thing that you can do here. However, that $300 was like a night on the town, and we were going to move our stuff anyways. I also did a full ditty move. It's now actually called a PPM, personally procured move. Everyone's calling it ditty, so if you say ditty, you won't sound silly. if you say PPM, you won't sound silly. You'll know. Transportation officers are going to know what you mean either way. But I did a full PPM, and I will tell you, we had, I think it was about 3,500 pounds. I rented a medium-sized U-Haul truck, which we did not fill, and that was probably one of the worst experiences of my life. Moving, it just wasn't enjoyable. I think after I deducted expenses, I made about $1,000, which was taxed because it was a profit. And then my wife was not pleased with it. We can talk more about that. I did a PPM log. So every single day that we moved, I wrote my thoughts about the PPM, and I kept a running log. I think it was like a 4 or 5 day move of everything along the way. And that's posted on the JO forum. We'll list a link there in the show notes. But you'll just have to forgive me because I think there are a few like profanities in it because I was so upset during the process. And then my other move was, again, a partial ditty where we had movers come and we packed out the rest of our stuff.
So if I could just ask a question, what are some of the determining factors in why you chose to do a personally procured move initially, and then some of the other factors and considerations for both of you as to why you've then done household goods?
So I think the key thing with the PPM was I had mentors along the way who told me, you've got to do a full PPM, you're going to get rich, there's so much money to be made. And that might have been the case. I think it one time, probably 10 to 15 years ago, before they changed the system, and I don't know what changes were made, and I'm a transportation officer, mind you, but there were changes made to the system so that people were not making $10,000, say, off of doing a full PPM. I don't know that that's not still the case. People can't still make a decent amount of money. But I was lured to the idea of getting paid, you know, a good amount of money to move my stuff. So I figured we didn't have kids, so that's also a key factor. My wife and I did not have children. We did not have our cats. You can all laugh at me for that. we didn't have our cats at the time. It just seemed like, hey, this is relatively low stress, low-hanging fruit. Why not give it a go? With the government move on the last move coming out here, we had acquired a few more things, and we had such a rotten experience from doing the PPM, the personally procured move, that we were like, all right, never again. So I don't know that we would never do it again. There are definitely some benefits, which we'll talk about later, in terms of having your stuff, for example, when you get there. But yeah, I think that was my thought process. I was trying to make money, essentially.
So to add to that, the other thing that my wife and I consider doing our moves is, when something gets broken, who's going to pay for it? If we move it ourselves, of course you could go back through the Army process, since it is a directed move, to have that covered. But if a contractor is moving it and it's something that I could potentially replace, then I'm okay with them taking responsibility for that. So that's the other side of it that we consider along the way in planning for our trips. And my wife jokes about how now she purchases more IKEA furniture just because it's easy to replace once it's broken in a PCS. So like I said, after doing 5 moves in 7 years, she's learned how that goes. And you know that there will be damages to furniture along the way and to TVs. But if you keep the receipts and you know exactly what you purchased and it's still available from a regular furniture shop, then it's not an issue for us. It hasn't been in the past to get it replaced quickly and within 30 days if it's not a high-cost item.
Yeah, I think the points that both of you have made are spot on. Some other considerations, and there's tons of them. So it's a matter of convenience on the front end and the back end. How comfortable are you loading and packing all of your equipment, all of your household goods, versus the convenience of having somebody else load it for you? Additionally, in terms of convenience of having it when you want it. If you do the Diddy move, or the PPM move, it travels with you, and then you have everything right when you get there. So absolutely some convenience on that end. However, if you're doing a household goods move procured by the government, you're to some extent at the whims of the contractors that get assigned to your move. So they may not be able to meet your pack out and load dates, or they might not be able to have your household goods delivered on the dates that you like to have it. It's all planning considerations, and it's just a matter of how quickly do you need it? What does your PCS timeline look like? And we'll get into that and what those planning considerations look like.
Yeah, all very valid points. Thank you, Kyle. So I want to segue on to our next question. And I know that at one point, in order to get your move kicked off, you simply went down to the installation transportation office and they just arranged for your truck. How does it work now that the Move.mil website is fully operational? The Move.mil website is, most of the kinks have been worked out and is pretty well on its own.
So we're definitely going through this process right now as we prepare for ILE. So it's pretty recent and fresh. So everybody has a little bit of anxiety about the orders process and the transition. When am I going to get my RFOs? When will I get that turned into orders? So forgive me if I'm insulting anyone's intelligence, but for some of the newest members to the force, just want to walk you through that quickly. So your branch manager will wind up sending out your orders, or nowadays it gets loaded to your AIM2 portal, and you'll be able to accessible through AKO or HRC on the self-service tabs. Once you're at the AIM2 portal, you're able to view your RFO, download that, and then as soon as you have that, that's when you're able to start putting pieces into motion. You'll be able to contact your installation levy office in order to get the copy of the RFO to them. They'll load any branch-specific instructions or installation-specific instructions for your current and future duty station, and then generate your orders from there. In that, it'll have the authorizations for your household goods. It'll have your weight allowances, and really all the information that you and your transportation providers need to get the ball rolling. So once you get your orders from the levy office, then you're able to go on to move.mil and initiate your own self-counseling for it. You'll have to create a DPS, which is the Defense Personal Property System account. Takes a few quick minutes to walk through that. You'll have an account up. It'll create a app for you in the ETA portal. Understand a lot of this sounds technical, but it's really pretty simple, and we'll have links to these sites in the show notes. Once you're in that portal, it's very easy. You build out your profile, you take your orders numbers and input that, and then it's just filling out your personal information of the current duty station, the new duty station, when you want to move your property, an estimate of how much you have for property. Just a recommendation, I would just put the total authorized weight on there so that when the movers show up, they're able to show up with everything that they need to be able to pack you out completely. There's also some survey items in there of any specialty items that you might have. If you need to ship that high-speed motorcycle, or if you have an RV, all sorts of subtle nuances to it. It walks you through that in the self-counseling form. Once you complete that, you'll go ahead and you'll hit submit on it, and then it'll get queued at your installation transportation office, or nowadays you'll see them as either the transportation office or the personal property processing office. So it will show in your move.mil portal the contact information for that office. So if you're in the peak season like we are now, and you've gone a couple of weeks when they say it should be 5 business days, then you can go ahead and follow up and make sure that it's not frustrated anywhere in there. Not that that ever happens. So once you hit submit on that, eventually you'll get contacted by that transportation office by one of the counselors. They'll make sure they do a cursory screening of the documents that you need to sign to fully authorize the move, and for them to be able to ship it off to the vendor for contracting and for bids. They'll send you those forms, you'll sign them and send them back to them, and then at that point it gets forwarded on to the JPSO, the Joint Personal Property Processing Office. There's an S in there somewhere, but So the GPSO is the regional office that manages all the carriers, whether it's the Northeast, the Northwest, the Southeast, etc. And they're the ones that actually send it out to bid to all of the contractors. So they do their screening on it. There's about another 5-day to 10-day turn there. And then you'll be contacted by a vendor confirming that they're either able to meet your household good dates or not. And then you have the ability at that point, if it doesn't meet your needs, that you can contact the customer support line, which we'll have in the show notes. We'll have a document that's got all of those major contacts. Now, those contacts may be different by region, but it'll just give you a good example of what that looks like and have the customer support number. And then at that point, once they've confirmed your household good pack and load dates, then you're able to get the ball rolling.
Wow, that was awesome. Thanks, Kyle. And I would like to caveat, and this may sound silly, but make sure that your orders are correct and all of your authorizations are correct. I remember I was on a short fuse move when I left Fort Campbell, and it was because literally three brigades were coming home from Iraq or Afghanistan all at the same time, and everybody was PCSing. And so I turned in my RFO, and I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and I finally got my orders. And my orders were for a different gentleman with my social security number listed on there, and he was going to FA, Field Artillery Captain's Career Course. I was going to Logistics Captain's Career Course. I was married. He was single. And so when I got my orders, all of my authorizations were not correct, and my report date and my report location were not correct. And at that point, we had waited and waited and waited. At no fault to our own, it was solely on the fault of the Installation and Transportation Office at Fort Campbell. And we there was nothing that we could do. They said that they were going to send us our orders to our email and route. We were doing a PPM, so they said it's no problem, everything will be fine. So we went to Captain's Career Course. We had to get our orders amended. They never got amended. And then the gentleman who was supposed to be going to Field Artillery Captain's Career Course was actually called off as though he was enrolled in the Combined Logistics Captain's Career Course at Click 3. And so he was listed as a no-show at Captain's Career Course because Fort Campbell forgot to change him. And that's, you would ask, like, how does a field artillery officer get orders for Captain's Career Course at Logistics? Well, there are branches that will allow you to go to different Captain's Career Courses than what your current branch is. So it didn't raise any red flags to anyone except for that officer when he was, of course, marked as a no-show. He subsequently emailed me, and we figured out everything that had gone on. It took a little bit of legwork because we weren't given our authorizations and we weren't paid at the with dependents rate for our dislocation allowance and everything else in between. But I can't highlight enough the importance of just making sure that all the paperwork is in order so that you don't find yourself in a similar situation. I'm sure it's probably a one-off. That doesn't happen frequently.
I'm sure we could actually all kind of list off a number of cases where either one simple thing like a unit identifier code, a UIC, was off, or I could list off three cases on three different instances where our orders were inaccurate in one way, shape, or form that has the potential to cause major implications on the back end. So definitely check out your orders and then take it to a mentor and have them take a look at it and say, does all of this make sense? So.
Excellent. So moving on to the next question, this is for you, David. As a company commander, what was your philosophy on giving people time to prepare for the PCS? I remember easygoing talk around the battalion about moving was that people wanted to take their, quote, their full 10 days to clear posts when it definitely never took that long. How long did you give people to prepare for the move? Was it more? Was it less? Did you pretty much let them work flexible hours once their replacement came in? So what was your philosophy?
My philosophy when it comes to preparing for a PCS either on the front end or on the back end when receiving a soldier. It kind of goes back to a military leader blog article from a couple years ago, and it was a commander who referenced their philosophy in regards to allowing people who are in processing to get set up and ready for their life at their new duty station and deferring to their family and what they need to do. And the philosophy basically in one sentence was that he would tell people, don't come into work until you have picture frames hung on the wall at home. And I thought that was a good philosophy, overarching philosophy, both when people are preparing to PCS and coming to your unit. We're going to move a lot in the Army, and that's one way to take care of people and specifically their families. And even if they don't have a family at home, if it's just a single soldier, letting them go the right way to include with an award, but also with some closure of their house and ready to go for their next duty station is definitely our responsibility, always within the context of what's currently going on within the organization. But I kind of defer to that when I can.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Dave. So if you haven't heard it already, you're going to hear it again and again, that leaders manage transitions. And that's not just for the unit or for the individual, but it's for the family as well. So if you want to have a culture of a winning team and of an organization that values families, then you got to put your money where your mouth is and assume some risk in terms of making sure that folks are taken care of when they in process and when they out process, so that you really on ramp them onto that team. But on the individual level, you also kind of owe it to yourself, to your family, and to the organization to think about a couple of those factors. And you got to look at what the current operational environment is. If you're coming out of the schoolhouse and you're PCSing into a unit, you want to know if they're getting ready to deploy. If they're getting ready to deploy or right in the middle of a ramp up for NTC, they're waiting on you to make those major moves, transitions from platoon leaders to XOs and XOs to different places. So you want to factor that in and then make your own determination of how many days do you really need to do it. Take the time to get there and do it right so that when you show up to the unit, you're ready to go and you're not trying to balance internet appointments and all that around it. But at the same time, you have the opportunity to take leave en route to the duty station. You know, and if the unit's deploying and you're trying to take, 20 days of leave on top of your 10 days of permissive TDY, and then when you get there, you're still trying to schedule appointments for the internet and for the cable guy to come out, you're not going to set the right tone going in for the unit. So absolutely, when they give you the opportunity, take advantage of that time, but also be a good steward of that time that they give you and make sure that you're ready to go when the time comes.
So this is one area that I personally relied on my sponsors, my unit sponsor for that soldier, to really manage it. I made sure that my intent was clear in that I wanted to make sure that, the government is getting an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. But at the same time, I tried to empower my, tactical level leaders and say to them, how's the sponsorship process going with Staff Sergeant so-and-so or Sergeant so-and-so or your new platoon leader? I always felt that the sponsorship program is there for a reason. Obviously, if you've done a number of moves before, you're a little bit more familiar with it. But I tried to empower that sponsor to manage the incoming or the incoming soldier's move. In the case of the outgoing, I felt that as long as there was a good left seat, right seat process that was laid out, again, by that unit level leader or that first line leader, that I was comfortable with allowing someone the maximum amount of flexibility. So my sort of, I guess, actionable advice for this is use your sponsors. Make sure that the Total Army Sponsorship Program is getting utilized the way it should. And I think you'll be good with that. So moving on to our next question, and we'll start this off with Kyle. When you PCS'd, how did you and your spouse divvy up the responsibilities for who oversaw the move versus who watched the kids, how the stuff was packed, everything that was going on with the movers?
Yeah, so I'd say it's different over different phases in our life. So when we were moving before we had kids, it was a lot easier We didn't really have to divvy up the responsibilities all that much. I pretty much did the, you know, all the military side counseling and development elements there, and we jointly packed everything, and I would say that we didn't really have any crazy systems and processes in place for that. Now, I could tell you that if we could, you know, looking back on it and taking what we've learned, we would absolutely divvy things up differently. So in terms of establishing a system that both my wife and I and the movers are able to understand, as you kind of treat it room by room. And what I would like to lead in with is just that with the time that we have today, there's no way that we're going to be able to cover all of the real tips and tricks. We're going to hit the major highlights to hopefully inspire you to go look at the other resources that are out there that kind of, it's common sense stuff that will absolutely save you time, effort, and money in the end. So to plug it right now, a lot of our tips come from the militaryspouse.com. There's a blog post, 50 tips you need to know before you PCS. That's listed in the show notes, as well as, not to go doctrinal, but you need to know the rules, and the rules are all listed in the joint travel regulation for personal property. And you'll get that after you are counseled online, and once the transportation office counselor provide your signed documents, they'll give you that. So in terms of a few tips for divvying it out, again, have that clear communicated system. What room, every room should have a specific marking system, whether you're putting certain labels, pre-made labels on there that are big and easily identifiable, or I'm not a very crafty person, but some Pinteresty folks take different color construction paper and tape those onto the boxes for specific rooms. And so on the rooms in the house, each door has a specific color on it. And then, you know, the spouse or both spouses, once the box is packed, they're assisting the movers and labeling those boxes with those markings. So once they get to the next duty station for the unpacking, they go and they put the same matching markings up on the doors, and then the movers know quickly, without any real talking, where each box needs to go. Really convenient when it comes to the kitchen and the living room, all your entertainment stuff, down to and including linen closets, bathrooms. Really helps to keep that stuff organized and keep it together quickly. Additionally, as things progressed in life, you know, once we had kids and we had two dogs, then those responsibilities came in too. You strongly recommend that you get the pets out of the house or put them in a room that's the items that you're not gonna have packed up go into. Harder to do that with kids. So it's a choose your own adventure, just like everything in life. But in a lot of cases, folks find that it's just easier to get the kids to either for them to go to a playground or stay with a friend for that 1 to 2 days when they're packing and loading.
I think the other resource that exists out there is already one of our podcast episodes that our spouses did, which they talked about this for a couple minutes about tips that they added and how they set up the process for getting ready for a PCS and specifically household goods pickup. And one thing that came up from all three of them was that they utilize one specific room for everything delicate. Everything that's a picture frame put in one spot, and everything else can kind of work itself out. But everything that really needs to be wrapped well, they put in one spot, which I thought was a good tip and we've used before. The only other way that my wife and I divide things is that my wife will concentrate on what's in the house, and then my responsibility, since we've rented over the last few years, has been fixing things in the house, addressing things in the yard, getting new blinds, repainting, things like that. And that's the only other thing that we've really done to split duties.
I do have a sort of follow-up question to this, and that is, there's this thing called temporary lodging entitlement, which is, for everyone out there, it's 10 days which can be separated 7 and 3, 5 and 5 on the 1 and 9 on the front or back end, which allows you to stay in a hotel room for up to 10 days. Did either of you use the temporary lodging entitlement for your PCS moves?
Yeah, absolutely. I strongly recommend that you do it because it gives you the freedom to it. That can be a great location if your hotel's got a pool for your spouse and the kids to be there, or somebody else that's helping to watch them. But it gets you out of the house, and the movers the ability to fully engage and get everything out of the house all in one fell swoop. It also helps you to make sure that you have the critical essential items that you need to sustain yourself over the PCS move already out and secured. One note that also I strongly recommend that you do that kind of relates to being out of the house is going through, once the house is empty, going through and videoing everything in the house to show, especially if you're renting, to show the final out condition. Once you hand over the property, it's usually written into your lease that they have up to a month to identify additional damages to the property that they can hold you liable for. So while you want to always trust people and have faith, there's the potential that when they're resetting the property that some of that damage occurs and you somehow get blamed for it. So taking good video on the back end, and then once you move into the next house, if you're renting, absolutely going through and videoing all of the current state of the house. Additionally, videoing all of your property before you go through and do your move. You can take pictures, but generally speaking, if you're rolling through your house and you're taking video, it helps you to document any of the items that if in shipment, if they're to be lost or damaged, that you would then be covered. If you need to do a claim, those videos will be especially helpful. And then if it's a high dollar item, anything over $500 that you don't have an original receipt for, I strongly recommend you make a small investment, get all those items out and identified, and then just hire an appraiser to come out and appraise those items so that you have supporting documentation. If not, on the back end, it's going to be very difficult for you to get that claimed, and you'll probably get pennies on the dollar.
All right, continuing on with this idea of small tips and things to do with the PCS, I'm just going to talk briefly about things before and after. So what's on my checklist before I PCS is that I've sent a hard copy letter to my future battalion commander in the mail, directly to their office or to the brigade commander. And the other thing is to consider before leaving your battalion is have permissive TDY for house hunting on the front end of arriving to your new unit approved by your current battalion commander or whoever the O5 commander is. That's a conversation you can have before leaving your current unit to get it approved, so you don't have to do that when you arrive to your new unit and on day one ask for 10 days of leave that's not going to be charged. And of course, that does have to be completed. You can only do that if you're actually looking for a home and a place to live once you arrive to your new duty station. Then on the back end, once you're arriving to your new duty station, my checklist is making sure that on day one, if I'm driving by the brigade or battalion headquarters, that I'm already in uniform, I'm squared away, I have a copy of my ORB, my last OERs, and I'm ready to have a discussion at that moment with my battalion commander or brigade commander on day one, just driving by. And that's a frequent thing that occurs for junior officers too, as you go in to sign in the new staff duty office and the brigade S1 grabs you and brings you right to see the commander or sergeant major and then sends you down to your battalion commander potentially. Even to start leave or permissive TDY is totally fine, but be prepared at that moment to explain why you want to be there and the unit history that's on your left shoulder.
All right, so just continuing on with some of the critical things that you probably are going to want to bring with you. We talked about doing a partial ditty or a personally procured move. So one of the pieces that most folks do is get a small U-Haul trailer to bring along your essential items. So some of the ones that we've found are most essential, definitely cookware and utensils. Now, I'm not talking about bringing plates and cups and silverware. You can get all that stuff, all the plastic and paperware to sustain you while you're out there. But even if you're using your temporary lodging expense and staying in a hotel suite that's got a stove, microwave, kitchen, a little kitchenette, you're going to get sick of eating fast food. You're going to want some home-cooked meals or just to not have to go out after a long day. So definitely you want to bring some pots and pans and cooking utensils. You're definitely going to want to bring your uniforms. I recommend bringing at least three sets of your OCPs. Definitely bring your dress uniform because you never know what you're going to be showing up into if there's or any ceremonies once you're there. You're going to want to bring your I Love Me book, and that's going to have all of your documents on your awards, your orders, your PCS travel, all your information on your Diddy move and your household goods. Any document that the Army's given you related to your formal record or to the move itself, you're definitely going to want to have there. You're probably going to need literally, no joke, 30 sets of your orders because you're going to need to give them to anything from the in-processing stations to cable companies. A lot of local companies will give you your line of credit based off of your orders versus having to do an initial deposit for like $500 for water in Liberty County, Georgia, right? So you'll need lots of copies of your orders. So just some other random ones, the linens, and some folks go with air mattresses. We plan for the worst in terms of we might not get our stuff for 30 days. So we don't want to live on an air mattress for 30 days. So we bring our good mattresses. We don't bring the box spring just based off of space, but we bring mattresses for my wife and I and for our kids. Additionally, we bring washer and dryer because when you don't have that for 30 days, it definitely complicates your logistics. So, David?
I guess the one thing that I would add to that is anything that is irreplaceable, and that can be anything on the spectrum of things you potentially have in your house. For example, my wife is a teacher by trade, and we made room for our last move for her 5 to 6 boxes of teaching materials that she accumulated over years of teaching and received some from other friends. But that is something that would cost a nominal amount to replace, but also would be very professionally difficult for her to replace. So even though it's a significant amount of space, we made room for it because that would be a lot of time to replace all that stuff.
Yeah, those are all very valid points. For us personally, I own 2 guns, and so moving guns can be a little bit difficult. One thing that I would encourage you to do, I personally own my concealed carry permit for my home of record state, and when we move and we're doing that drive cross country or wherever we're going, we try and only stop, whether that be to use the bathroom, whether that be for food or anything like that, in states that have reciprocity with my concealed carry permit. That way, when we're moving the guns, I can safely carry those without having to worry about leaving them in the car. Or if I have to stop, one of us stays in the car with the guns to make sure that we're not leaving those alone. Also, you're authorized up to 90 days of temporary storage on your orders. So if you move somewhere and your stuff gets put in temporary storage, just know that you're authorized up to 90 days, no cost to you. If you need to extend that for whatever reason, hopefully you don't, you can get that done as well. You have to make a formal request, but you're covered for up to 90 days. And then the last thing I would recommend, just personal tip and trick, is you should keep all of your receipts related to your move. So if you buy boxes, you're buying packing paper or potentially bubble wrap or something along those lines, just know that most of those are tax deductible. With the new tax law, and I am not an accountant, this is my disclaimer, so check with an accountant or it's some sort of tax advisor system or something like that. However, I have looked and did notice that the new tax law still covers, allows you to itemize expenses for costs related to military moves. So if it is in support of a military move, you are allowed to itemize your moving expenses and still do the standard deduction or whatever it is. It doesn't penalize you. So again, check with a trusted tax representative. However, I've taken a look at that, and it appears as though you can still do that. So make sure that you keep all of your receipts. Guys, am I forgetting anything?
So I alluded to it a little bit earlier about when stuff hits the fan with your move. So what can you do? What are some resources that you can reach out to? Number one, definitely stay in contact with your sponsor so that your sponsor isn't just somebody who is checking the block on an Army form for an Army program. They're there for a reason and can really help you out and help you to understand what the resources are at your new duty station. They're also your conduit for keeping the chain of command informed. So if you're delayed, if there's a major issue, or just that your household goods are going to be delayed, they can help to ensure that the command is informed and help you through it. Additionally, I can't say enough about your Army Community Service Office. They're your local installation resource, and one of their biggest things that they have is the lending closet. The lending closet is going to have all of the things that we listed off as the critical items that you probably want to bring with you, and they can either give you a complete package, or you can run down their itemized list and say that these are the items that I need, whether it's an iron or that cookware or anything to that extent. So strongly recommend that you look at that lending closet and see what the resources are that are available. Additionally, the ACS generally has some sort of a newcomer brief or documents and resource list that's got all of the installations, resources, their contact lists, and then things that you can get involved with on the installation. So they're a great resource when you first show up to a new duty station.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you both for coming out and sitting in the huddle with us. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast episode. You can connect with us on iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through our Facebook pages or our Twitter handle, @leaders_huddle and @JO_forum. We've tried to make sure that we're getting at a number of those episodes, so if you send us a request for an episode, we're going to go out and try and find that person or people and get them on the episode. If there's something you want us to cover, we're happy to do that, so please send us a tweet. If you don't feel comfortable sending us a tweet, send us a direct message or a private message, and we're pretty good about responding to those as well. So until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others.
The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.